Data Treasury versus Jack Henry and Associates. Okay. Let me start by saying some of the issues overlap substantially with the issues we just heard. Unless counsel has particular points that they feel like really need to be made on those repetitive issues, of course we will hear them. But if you're just going to repeat the same arguments you've already made, the court has heard all of those arguments, both counsel, I realize different counsel, different client, don't want to prejudice your client. So, of course, if you have points that you feel like need to be supplemented, do so. But at the same point, you know, let's not have a complete redo of the last 30 minutes. Okay.
All right. Yes, Your Honor, thank
you. Mr. Chin, please proceed.
Your Honor, I'll pick up where I left off with respect to discussing Campbell, because one of the main issues here in the Jack Henry appeal is whether or not Campbell, in combination with the Blackwell reference, render the claims at issue obvious. Now, going back to Campbell, that problem that I identified earlier with respect to how the board got it wrong with their construction and with looking outside PST and 10 to look for subsystems that are actually not subsystems. That undermines the obviousness analysis here, because you're missing these elements. You can't have – you're missing a subsystem ID when the sending bank is not a subsystem. The board's decision and the petitioner's position has been, well, you need to look at the sending bank. That's a subsystem. And when you identify that, that's subsystem identification information. Our Data Treasury's point is, no, it's not. You're pointing at something outside the Campbell system. And so if you're trying to combine Campbell with Blackwell, what you're bringing with Campbell is something that's just a one-tiered system with a cloud that has a node and that happens to receive check images from entities.
Why can't a receiving bank be a central subsystem? What is your evidence that it can't be?
The receiving bank in the specification, the way it's described is it basically has components that are very similar, if not almost identical, to what one would have in the sending bank. It's basically just has a different label to it. In fact, the specification also talks about the fact you could send things back and forth, basically, in the same way. So if anything, if one has to put a label on it, I suppose you could call it the receiving bank effectively the same thing as a remote subsystem. Of course, our position is that it's not, because it's outside Campbell anyway in terms of what the system actually is. But if you had to put a label on it, it's functionally the same as the remote. It does not do the same things as one would expect to have in a central system, Your Honor. Okay. Now, with respect to Blackwell, the Blackwell reference discusses encryption, but it's really just, you know, in the couple paragraphs right before the claim, and the encryption applies only to the images. Only to the images.
Is your argument about Blackwell that it's not analogous art, or is it that there's no motivation to combine these two? I feel like there's been a little bit of a moving target in terms of what was argued below and what's now being argued on appeal. So could you tell me which of those two arguments, or both, if you think that you actually made both of them? What is your argument precisely about Blackwell?
Well, with respect to Blackwell, it happens to be a video conferencing type system that is described in the patent as in the bank context. And so to us, that is really not analogous. Granted, it's discussed in the banking context, but at the end of the day, it's really a system you could have in any other industry where you just want to have captured.
I want to clarify what I want to hear from Judge Moore's question. Are you arguing motivation to combine?
Well, that's part of it, too. We don't think there would be a motivation to combine.
Where do you raise it below?
I believe we raised it in the oral hearing and in our papers. I don't have a precise site for you.
Your formal response to the PTAB did not present any argument regarding motivation to combine, did it?
I thought it did, but if Your Honor can't find it, then I'll defer to Your Honor.
You show me where it is in JA 4584 to 4683. Because I couldn't find it.
So I'll help you in that the only thing I could find that comes close is at page 4640, but that really seems to quite clearly be an argument that you think Campbell and Blackwell are non-analogous art, or at least Blackwell is non-analogous to Campbell is the way you phrase it. But I don't see how that morphs into an argument that there's no motivation to combine the two. That's the closest thing I could find for you, where you talk about this combination and talk about the two of them is there.
But I think
Judge Wallach's point is a good one. You do make an argument in your blue brief about motivation to combine. They argue that point was waived. I don't see a precise cite by you that directs me to a place where I can conclude it wasn't waived. It's a factual issue. You've got to raise it below to raise it on appeal.
I understand, Your Honor. That is what I have highlighted in my appendix, and that's the best reference I can find for Your Honor.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Part of oral argument is to give counsel a chance to say, no, you missed it, but okay.
And to close out the discussion with Blackwell, basically the discussion about encryption really pertains just to the images. Now, early in the specification, there's also discussion about how do you initiate this initial call between the remote system and this verification terminal that where a banker sits. And there is some discussion about a remote terminal ID, something one might akin to a subsystem ID. But that there's no indication in the specification about that terminal ID being encrypted in any way. What happens really is one terminal calls another. There's no indication that there's anything unique about that terminal ID in the context of Blackwell to suggest that it ought to be encrypted and could serve as some type of subsystem identification information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chin. Let's hear from Mr. Jones.
Yes, Your Honor, good morning, and may it please the Court.
Mr. Jones, with some legitimate reason, your brief seems to be a bit waiver-happy. They waive this, they waive that. Oh, yeah, and they waive this other thing, too. As the discussion just showed, you know, we're not unsympathetic to that argument in some regards. But in others, you argue that they waived the ability to contest the board's claim construction, and you make that argument on red brief at page 20. The board's decision itself expressly says, let's see where I have it here. Give me a second. It's at 2199. Patent owner does not challenge directly this interpretation, although it does make some arguments that imply it disagrees with some aspects of the construction. For example, patent owner takes issue with our statement that our interpretation does not limit subsystem identification information to any particular subsystem. That seems to be a lot of what he is arguing now, seems to be consistent with what the board recognized he argued in front of them. So is it possible you got a little waiver happy?
Your Honor, our waiver argument on the definition of SSID was based primarily on the fact that in PTAB, PTAB issued a scheduling order. The scheduling order said, put something in your final response. If it's not in your final response, we're going to deem it waived. The analogy I would make is in civil trials to a motion in limine. You raise a motion in limine. If you lose, the evidence stays out. But if you don't offer it at trial, you're deemed to have waived it. That's what we believe they happened here. What happened was, they argued about a different claim construction for SSID in the preliminary round. They didn't say anything about it in their formal response. And the only thing they said, most that they said in their briefing at PTAB was, well, we disagree with the construction. They never
offered.
To quote
from A Few Good Men, they say, we strongly disagree.
Well, so be it. But they did not offer an alternative construction.
I think it was strenuously object or something.
You can't handle the truth. But again, all they did was say we disagree with it. They didn't offer a different construction. They didn't brief it. They didn't explain it. We think that could be deemed waived. We recognize that we've looked for a Federal Circuit case that says that, and we can't find one. We can't find one on this issue at all. This really would be an issue of first impression.
Because the board didn't conclude it was waived,
The board did not conclude.
And we review a waiver decision for an abuse of discretion. So if the board itself didn't conclude that they had waived that argument, do you nonetheless think that I should do that in the first instance?
As a matter of judicial prudence, Your Honor, probably not. Probably not.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook. Move on to your other arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I am going to skip the issue about whether the CBM was properly instituted, and I really don't have anything much more to say about the 102 issues.
Well, then tell me about Campbell in particular, yes. And Blackwell, if you don't mind, because that's the one issue we really didn't cover prior to this.
That's correct.
That combination. Do they, in combination, disclose all of the individual elements and taken together?
So let me just start there. The board did find that in combination they disclosed all the elements, and there was plenty of evidence to support the board's finding in that regard. Campbell, as Mr. Rudman discussed at some length, discloses multiple tiers. That's figure one in Campbell. Their argument is, well, Campbell doesn't claim multiple tiers. It just claims one tier. That doesn't matter for obviousness analysis. The question is, does Campbell teach? Does Campbell disclose multiple tiers? And if the court looks at figure one in Campbell, right on the front, it clearly shows the three tiers of Campbell. And that was something that was new.
And so if I understand your argument, it is that the specification clearly discloses the three tiers and figure one does. So even if the claim may be more narrowly limited, as claims often are, they often don't claim every single thing that's disclosed in the spec. Nonetheless, the spec itself discloses it.
Exactly. All right. That's exactly right. And it also discloses encryption. That's the other thing they say isn't there. It does disclose encryption. If, again, directing the court back to column 5, there are two paragraphs, two sections in the same long paragraph. I believe the first is in lines 23 through 30, and the second is toward the end of the paragraph, lines 55 through 60. Those are the places that Campbell specifically discloses. You can talk about where the location of the sending bank, the location of the receiving bank, and down at the bottom it says you can encrypt all this information. That is there in Campbell. Encryption is also, as I think Mr. Chin just conceded, encryption is discussed in Blackwell. And that would be on column 16, lines 14 through 25.
The PTO didn't find that, though. The PTO based its fact-finding on Campbell, and we can't, in a first instance, make fact-findings, right?
True, but if the issue...
If they they agreed to it, or you think they acquiesced in it.
Which I think he just did agree to it, because he cited it in his argument. It talks about using secure processor. It talks about bitmap files being encrypted for transmission. Talks about doing transmission, I believe the line is, to prevent piracy or trickery. And that is exactly what we have there. PTAB appropriately found a motivation to combine, even though that really was not raised, and that is an issue which we do believe was waived. They found a motivation to combine. They found that both Campbell and Blackwell they're both in the fields of computerized banking systems. Blackwell talks about ATMs and all sorts of banking applications, particularly with those having geographical distances between users and operators. Both involve solutions to problems of document imaging and scanning. There was plenty of evidence, substantial evidence, on which PTAB could base its determination that there was a motivation to combine, assuming that issue was preserved. The other argument that Data Treasury made was that PTAB erred in not making findings on expectation of success. There was a very good reason that PTAB didn't make any findings on expectation of success, and that is because PTAB was never asked to make any findings on that issue. That issue was clearly never raised below and was argued for the first time. That's why PTAB didn't make any argument, anything about that. There's one other point to be made. We made in our brief, and I'll try to touch on it briefly here, about the issue of obviousness and whether or not Campbell and or Blackwell appropriately disclosed encrypting SSID. In the FIS proceedings,
Isn't the whole question whether information is SSID? Isn't that what it comes down to? Because Campbell discloses encrypting information.
Information.
The only question is, does information include SSID? Because it doesn't disclose SSID precisely.
It doesn't use the name. It doesn't use the word. I think that was sort of what Mr. Rubin was alluding to in Blue Calypso. It's not the same words, but it's the same idea. Again, as Mr. Rubin said, in the Ballard patent, on many occasions, the patentee equates the word subsystem with the word location. And there's no question that Campbell discloses sending information about the location and encrypting that that information. So let me go back to the FIS issue for just a moment. We didn't really get to talk about that this morning, but in the briefing in the FIS matter, FIS said you have a 112 problem. You may claim encrypting SSID, but you never disclose that in the specification. You never explain how that works. So you have a 112 problem. Data Treasury responded to that by saying we don't have to explain how that works. It would be obvious to a person of skill in the art as to how that works. We don't have to describe how to encrypt or what to encrypt, because anybody looking at our claims would know that, in fact, there is encryption. It is obvious to a person of skill in the art. They said that at the Fidelity hearing on in their brief on page 42, in the Fidelity hearing on page 39 at lines 6 through 8 of that transcript. They're referring to the tag. So what we have, Your Honors, is this. We have Ballard over here that talks about encryption, financial information, and they say what's obvious to encrypt financial information like the SSID. On this hand, we have Campbell and we have Blackwell. They talk about encryption. They talk about financial information. If it's obvious in Ballard to have encrypted, it would certainly be obvious in Blackwell and Campbell, either alone or in combination. Your Honor, I've learned over the years that it's rarely a mistake to quit early. Unless the court has any other questions, I will sit down.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Your Honors, with respect to the Data Treasury patents, the discussion about whether it would be obvious to have encryption needs to be looked at in the context of that patent and its disclosures and what a person of skill in the art looking at that patent would think about whether or not you would use encryption in that context. We disagree that you would have that same view when reviewing Campbell and when reviewing Blackwell. When you look at those references, yes, there may be some indication of encryption of something, but not of what would be subsystem identification information. That is information that would identify, as the board construed, information that would identify a subsystem. So just the fact that you find the word encryption in Blackwell or in Campbell or in both, it really isn't enough. That's not enough to say, well, we can find the word here in this column, and then we match it up to another word in a different column pages earlier and say, well, there you go, we have encrypted subsystem identification information. And I believe that is what the Jack Henry and Fiserv has sought to do in terms of trying to look for an indication of subsystem identification information. And one more point on the 988 patent. The Ballard patent makes a distinction between customer identification information and subsystem identification information. So subsystem identification information is indicated by DAT200 consistently throughout the specification and in the claims. Customer identification information is basically the name of an entity. And when it's the name of an entity, when the patentee... Mr. Ballard already saw a distinction there. But what we're seeing is they're bringing in the customer identification information, saying that's enough to be a subsystem identification information. And so, for example, if you've got a multi-branch bank and each of their various geographically distributed data access terminals or scan stations are labeled with the exact same name, you don't really get much utility out of it. But if you're identifying the subsystem, you will know, for example, if you have a problem with one of the scan images, which of those terminals had a problem. And that helps you hone in on the issue, and that's part of the utility of having a distinct data field for subsystem identification information rather than just relying on something much broader, which is just the name of the sending bank, for example, in Campbell. That is not the same thing. They are different. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Chen, thank you. We thank both counsel for the arguments. The case is taken under submission.